WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. A flight school at Shenandoah Valley Regional Airport is airlifting supplies to areas in North Carolina cut off by Helene. We investigate money troubles at Virginia's Emergency Services Agency and how it's affecting local rescue departments. And Democratic Senator Tim Kaine and Republican challenger Hung Cao meet in their first and likely only debate. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, October 3rd. After Hurricane Helene made some areas in North Carolina inaccessible by car, local aviators are delivering much-needed supplies to those who have been cut off. The Daily News Record reports that Blue Ridge Aviation, LLC, a flight school and aircraft rental service located at the Shenandoah Valley Regional Airport in Weirs Cave, is helping collect donations of supplies for people in North Carolina affected by the storm. The flight school began sending airplanes full of donated supplies to a collection site in Statesville, North Carolina, on Wednesday. The airport shared a list of items the drive needs on social media that includes powdered drink packets, pet food, toothbrushes, toothpaste, trash bags, socks, and more. They also need baby products such as formula, wipes, and diapers. Items can be dropped off at the General Aviation Terminal at the Shenandoah Valley Regional Airport. Initial estimates in Virginia suggest at least 200 homes were flooded across several counties, and that number will likely rise. Virginia Public Radio's Roxy Todd was in Giles County, where volunteers are organizing to help people here in Virginia and across Appalachia.
In the small town of Parisburg in the New River Valley, a Christian mission group operates a thrift store and food pantry. Pastor Larry Morris and his wife Debbie drove down this morning from Roanoke with a vanload of supplies for flood victims.
So much devastation in the whole New River Valley, you know, it's just so sad. People lost everything.
Churches and Christian ministries like this one are opening shelters and donation drives across Southwest Virginia. In the nearby community of Newport, another group called the Holler to Holler Mutual Aid Collective has filled an old school gymnasium with donated supplies. Russell Chisholm is one of the volunteers with this group. He says businesses have also opened donation centers in Christiansburg and Blacksburg to help with their effort. Many of these volunteers also helped with cleanup efforts in previous floods, which allowed them to make connections with volunteers in communities across Appalachia.
You know, we saw this before in Kentucky and other flooded areas where people end up living outside for long periods of time, particularly in those areas where like government services don't reach.
They're organizing now to get help to rural communities, places that sometimes get overlooked by disaster relief. In Giles County, I'm Roxy Todd.
Virginia's governor announced Wednesday that the state has received approval for major flood relief from the federal government, and he's not ruling out the use of money generated through membership in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. Also with Virginia Public Radio, Sandy Hausman has that story.
The governor told reporters in Charlottesville that he's pleased with early efforts to help communities devastated by Hurricane Helene and said state agencies are keeping the pressure on to ensure power, water, and cell service are restored.
We've come together in such an extraordinary way with nonprofit effort, state effort, local effort, getting people out of isolated areas with road clearing, getting electricity restored, reestablishing cell phone service, getting food and water to all those that have lost it.
He noted federal money would also be flowing to the Commonwealth for flood relief.
We have now been approved by the White House for major emergency relief, and that opens up a whole new support system for folks.
But he did not rule out the use of funds generated through the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a group of states that provided the Commonwealth with $827 million before Glenn Youngkin pulled Virginia out of the coalition.
Well, the Regi money is not specifically set aside for this, and I have to go to our General Assembly to get that authorization. We have done that historically.
Youngkin urged the public to send money to those hurt by Hurricane Helene, putting his stamp of approval on the United Way, local churches, and a Danville group called God's Pit Crew. I'm Sandy Hausman.
In the latest blow to Virginia's emergency medical services, the state has announced it will no longer provide an essential software system to local agencies. That news comes alongside more details about the state's investigation into mismanagement and corruption at the Office of EMS. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee investigated.
It's been more than a year since the Virginia Department of Health launched an internal audit of the Office of Emergency Medical Services, or OEMS, the state agency that oversees and is meant to provide education and funding opportunities to local rescue squads and fire departments. Since then, the former associate director, Adam Lamar Harrell, has pled guilty to embezzling more than $4 million from the agency. He faces up to 20 years in prison and is scheduled to be sentenced next month. The audit turned up even more, quote, financial discrepancies, a total of $33 million that was spent improperly. As the state tracked down the extent of the damage, OEMS suspended several programs that local agencies relied on, including grants for cardiac monitors and ambulances, scholarships for paramedic training, and an annual symposium that fulfilled first responders' continuing education requirements. The latest item on the chopping block is a software system that tracks patient care information. Local EMS agencies are legally required to have one, and the state has provided one for more than a decade. But first responders found out last month that OEMS is cutting that service as of next July, and a deeper look into the audit report reveals that this program is tangled up with a lot of the misspent state funds.
Every time an agency that is licensed to provide emergency medical services in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and really throughout the United States, responds on an emergency call, we are required to create a patient care record of our interaction with a patient.
Harrisonburg Fire Chief Matthew Tobia said his department already has their own contract for software provided by the company ImageTrend. They pay about $14,000 a year for it, and it's customized to their needs. But Tobia acknowledged that smaller agencies relying on the state for software don't have the budget he does.
I know volunteers who are literally fueling the ambulances out of their own pockets.
He showed me what all goes into the reports that paramedics can type up on tablets. It's a lot.
The call location, the census track, time we arrived on location, and we have the ability to scan a patient's driver's license, wow, barcode. It also lets us know whether this is one of several patients at the scene of an emergency or just a single patient at the scene of an emergency. Why were we called? Why are we here? It lets us record medications and procedures. Where did we transport to? Did we turn the patient over to somebody else? We can evaluate them by what's known as the Cincinnati Stroke Scale. That, if they score a particular number, might result in the patient being directed straight to the CAT scan to see whether or not they would benefit from a clot-busting drug.
It's just as sophisticated on the outgoing end. The program sends reports to the hospital for their patient records, the National Fire Incident Reporting System, and the state's EMS patient care reporting system. It can make referrals to the city's community paramedic program, send evidence of abuse to Child Protective Services, and inform the crew of a medevac helicopter airlifting someone from the scene.
It's just a seamless way to ensure that information is shared.
Wintergreen Fire and Rescue, which provides emergency medical services for all of Nelson County, has relied on the state-provided system. The county's annual budget there is an eighth the size of Harrisonburg's. After the Department of Health launched its investigation into OEMS last year, Chief Curtis Sheets allocated an extra $25,000 to cover losses in state funding.
We put a line item in our budget that's actually kind of tongue-in-cheek. It's labeled Surprises from Richmond. We're going to exceed our line item, but not by a whole lot.
He said they expect the patient care information system to cost them an additional $7,000 to $10,000 a year.
This is just going to add one more thing, another log to the fire, if you will, which honestly is probably not going to be all that impactful for a large county, but for small ones like Nelson, it is.
In the face of this cut, on top of so many others, local first responders wonder, where did all the money go? Besides the $4 million that Associate Director Harrell embezzled, there's another $29 million in, quote, discrepancies. We'll look further into that issue and how the patient care information system plays into it in part two of this report. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
We'll have part two tomorrow, and you can find links to more information at WMRA.org and on the app. A conservative group is filing a discrimination complaint against the University of Virginia. NBC 29 reports that the BIPOC Alumni Student Mentoring Program offers support to dozens of UVA students. A group tied to the Legal Insurrection Foundation alleges that the program violates Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, which disallows discrimination based on race or national origin. A spokesperson for the conservative group says they're not seeking money or legal fees. On Wednesday, a judge ruled that the four giraffes that Rockbridge County seized from the Natural Bridge Zoo last December may finally be moved from the roadside attraction. Cardinal News reports that they and 96 other animals were seized in a December 2023 law enforcement raid, but due to transportation concerns for the largest of the seized animals, the giraffes have remained in place. Two of the giraffes are pregnant, and they will be moved Thursday morning. The director of Virginia's Animal Law Unit did not disclose where the giraffes will be moved, except to say it would be a safe place where they can give birth. Republican Hung Cao and Democrat Tim Kaine met for a televised debate Wednesday night. It will likely be their only debate before Election Day. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
On question after question, Republican Senate candidate Hung Cao responded by mentioning undocumented immigrants. Whether the question was about child care or housing or even guns, this is part of his response to a question about an ongoing strike by longshoremen.
If your family is struggling to put food on the table, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? The answer across the board is no. The only people better off today than they were 4 years ago are illegal aliens, criminals, and senators like Senator Tim Kaine.
Senator Tim Kaine responded this way.
4 years ago, we were in the middle of COVID. Hundreds of thousands of people were dying. Businesses were closing. You couldn't find toilet paper on shelves. And we had a president trying to overturn the peaceful transfer of power.
As for the strike, Kaine said dock workers are entitled to better treatment, higher wages, and more benefits. I'm Michael Pope.
And finally today, as the East Coast dock workers' strike continues, one economist says the impact of shutting down the ports will depend on how long the strike lasts, WHRO's Ryan Murphy reports.
Economist Bob McNabb from Old Dominion University says if the strike is over quickly, the impact will be negligible.
It will be like a bad storm that disrupts economic activity around the port. But after a couple weeks, we'll look back at it and kind of look at it as a bullet that was dodged.
But if the strike stretches on for a couple of weeks, imported items like shoes, clothes, and car parts may get harder to find.
It grows exponentially. You don't unload one ship, so that ship is waiting. Then another ship waits, and then another ship waits. And even if everybody returns from the strike after a prolonged period, it will just take weeks to unjam it.
McNabb likened the local impact of a longer strike to a federal government shutdown. If people in port-related industries are out of work for weeks, those families will start really feeling the squeeze.
Ryan Murphy reporting for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Thursday.